What's up, everyone? I'm Joe Pompliano, and this is The Joe Pomp Show. Hope everyone's having a great weekend so far. We got a lot to talk about today. First and foremost, one of the things that always amazes me is how the NFL has turned itself into a 24/7, 365 business. There are literally no days off. Between draft season and free agency, every fan base across the league looks forward to the future, and debate shows fill their time with NFL content, despite the NBA, NHL, and March Madness being in full swing. Still, this week, the Chicago Bears stole the show, announcing a new indoor stadium project on the lakefront in Chicago. This deal is equally complex as it is interesting, so we'll dig into all of it today. Plus, we'll chat through Deion Sanders' early financial impact in Colorado, Russell Wilson's $50 million real estate problem, Nick Saban's most recent comments on NIL, and more. Let's get right into it. So for those of you that are new here, I've changed up the structure of the podcast a little bit. We're still going to be doing a deep dive every single day, but that'll be towards the end of the episode. The first 5 or 10 minutes or so will be structured with just a few different topics, things that I'm thinking, hearing, or watching, and it will be called The Hurry Up. So let's kick things off with the first issue of Hurry Up. Number one, Deion Sanders' first season at the University of Colorado. It obviously didn't go as planned. I mean, the team finished dead last in the Pac-12 conference with a 4-8 record. But off the field, it's a different story. Colorado was on primetime television several times throughout the early part of last season, and that increase in attention led to a record 68,000 applicants for the fall of 2024. That's a 20% jump from the year prior. Now, many of you are familiar with this concept. It's called the Flutie effect, and it's where athletic success leads to academic success. And there are countless examples. I mean, we could talk about Cam Newton at Auburn. We could talk about Butler going to the national championship game in the Final Four. And more recently, Nick Saban's impact leading to a 60% increase in enrollment at Alabama. Colorado's out-of-state students also pay 3 times more in tuition than in-state students, around $42,000 compared to in-state students at $13,000. So this increased attention only needs to result in a few hundred additional students to pay off Deion's entire $30 million contract. Plus, one of the less discussed things is that more applicants means the school can be more selective, eventually raising their academic standards, too. That's why you'll commonly hear people say that sports are the front door to a university. All right, number two, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan did his annual press conference at the Players' Championship this week. He talked for roughly an hour, but let's be honest, he said virtually nothing. Monahan got visibly annoyed at questions around the LIV Golf PGA Tour merger with the Saudi Arabia PIF, which is weird considering he only talks to the media a couple times each year, and that's the single most important storyline in all of professional golf. Monahan also refused to answer whether anyone on the PGA Tour's board has asked him to resign. And the most interesting thing he said all day was that members of the PGA Tour's new investment group, Strategic Sports Group, flew to Saudi Arabia with him in January, and merger talks are, and I quote, accelerating. Maybe I'm just being a little bit harsh, but the lack of communication from Jay Monahan is so incredibly frustrating. Monahan makes $20 million annually and flies around the world on a private jet, yet he sat back and watched LIV Golf take some of the PGA Tour's best players due to his inability to raise capital quickly. Now, they have the money via a $3 billion deal with SSG, but no one knows what is going on, including PGA Tour players themselves, and there is still no end in sight, despite the merger being announced nearly a year ago. Number three, NFL free agency is one of the most entertaining periods in all of sports. The legal tampering period is especially amusing because deals start getting announced minutes after it begins, with fans led to believe teams reach out to agents, negotiate contracts, and agree to deals that get publicly announced all within a few short minutes. This, of course, is not how it works. Many of these deals have been in the works for months through conversations during the offseason and at the NFL Combine. Most of what you read online isn't really true either. Take Baker Mayfield, for example. He signed a $100 million extension with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but only $40 million of that money is truly guaranteed up front, and the team could cut him after next year and save $60 million on his contract. The other interesting thing to watch is how these deals get reported. ESPN pays Adam Schefter $9 million annually to break as much NFL news as possible, and he typically does a fantastic job working the phones to earn that salary. But the dirty secret in NFL free agency is that the insider, everyone, not just Adam Schefter, really work for the agents. These agents typically text them details of a free agency deal in a group chat with several other insiders, sometimes providing them the exact wording for a tweet. This is why there was a tweet that went viral earlier this week of Zach Ertz agents commonly being referred to as a tight end guru. And it also allows agents to control the narrative, publishing the highest number possible, regardless of how the contract is actually structured. Number four, sticking with the NFL free agency theme, you probably saw that Russell Wilson signed a $1.2 million veteran minimum deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. A veteran minimum deal was always going to be his best option since teams knew that the Denver Broncos would be on the hook for his entire salary up to $38 million, regardless of what his new team was paying him. The more interesting part to me is that Russell Wilson and his wife Sierra are now selling and taking offers on their $25 million home. It was the most expensive residential sale in Denver when he first moved there, and Russell Wilson is also still trying to sell his $26 million home outside of Seattle, meaning Russell Wilson and his family currently have over $50 million of residential real estate on the market. Now, of course, I don't know what level of financing he used to purchase these homes, but the carrying costs on those two homes alone are probably hundreds of thousands of dollars each month collectively. Something's telling me Russell Wilson will be renting in Pittsburgh, especially since it's a one-year prove-it deal. And last but not least, when it comes to the hurry-up, topic number five, we're going to be talking about Nick Saban. Now, many of you saw Nick Saban participated in an NIL roundtable discussion in Washington, D.C. earlier this week, and he caught a lot of flack for saying, number one, NIL played a significant role in his retirement, but also everything he believed about college football for 50 years no longer exists because all players want to know is how much they're going to be getting paid. Now, most people seem to be arguing that Nick Saban earned $150 million before taxes and agent fees through an inherently corrupt system. And now, he just doesn't like that players have more power and can earn their own money too. But I really don't think that's the case. If you watch the whole thing, he was saying things that are completely opposite than the quotes that were coming out. In fact, Nick Saban is 72 years old and could be enjoying retirement at his $20 million Florida home after committing 50 years of his life to football. Instead, he is on Capitol Hill on a Tuesday afternoon, participating in a group effort to improve the sport. He simply loves this stuff. And at some point, people realize every coach is telling us the same thing. The current model is unsustainable. But rather than reverting to the old model, which, again, was inherently corrupt by withholding the lion's share of profits from student athletes, Nick Saban is simply arguing that we should transition to a new NFL-like model where athletes are treated like employees and get to share in the sport's increasingly large TV contracts. Not only does that seem like a genuinely good idea and something I've been arguing for a long period of time, but I would argue that most people would agree with that, withstanding Saban's other comments.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, let's get to the main event, which is the Chicago Bears announcing a new stadium deal, which quite frankly offers more questions than it does answers. It all started on Monday. Early in the morning, the NFL Chicago Bears confirmed a report that they would be building a new stadium on Chicago's lakefront near Soldier Field. The new stadium will reportedly include a $2 billion private investment from the team and a dome, allowing the city of Chicago to potentially host premium events like the Super Bowl and Final Four. This is welcome news for many fans. The team's current stadium, Soldier Field, is 100 years old and by far the NFL's oldest stadium. It's also the NFL's smallest stadium at 61,500 seats, and a new venue could drastically increase the team's annual revenue. However, I'm still not convinced this is going to happen. Building a new stadium directly south of Soldier Field is a logistical nightmare for fans, and anyone who has followed Chicago politics over the years knows how impossible it is to build on the lakefront. Another thing to keep in mind is that the city and its taxpayers would own this stadium, despite the Bears contributing $2 billion of personal money. This is a highly unusual arrangement, as most professional sports teams in the United States like to subsidize costs of stadiums via taxpayer funds, while privatizing the subsequent profit via franchise valuation growth. That's not to say it couldn't work. A potential scenario, for example, might include Chicago giving up the land for free to build the stadium, providing the team with free rent in perpetuity, and offering them tax breaks on the $2 billion construction investment. But it's also important to remember that there is no such thing as a free lunch. And when things don't add up financially, it's typically for a good reason. Instead, it feels like the Bears might be using this announcement as leverage. Many of you will remember that the team previously purchased a 326-acre plot of land for $197.2 million in Arlington Heights, a suburb 25 miles northwest of the city. The Bears sold everyone on a grand vision, including a multi-billion dollar privately funded stadium with a surrounding entertainment district. But then, Arlington Heights increased the property's annual tax assessment 5x from just a few years prior, despite the construction process not even starting yet. And the Bears suddenly found themselves looking at a $100 million higher property tax bill than they initially expected. The Bears released a statement in June 2023 saying, "The property's original assessment at 5 times the 2021 tax value, and the recent settlement with Churchill Downs, the property's former owner, for 2022 being 3 times higher, fails to reflect the property is not operational and not commercially viable in its current state." The Bears obviously weren't happy about this, and they have been negotiating with Arlington Heights since. In fact, after the Bears announced their plans for a new stadium on the lakefront earlier this week, the Village of Arlington Heights released a statement saying that they had spoken with the team and received assurances that the Bears' interest in building a new stadium in Arlington Heights had not changed. They said, "The Village of Arlington Heights is aware of media reports regarding a proposed Chicago Bears stadium concept in Chicago. Village officials spoke with the Chicago Bears football club today, and while they are evaluating all of their options, they confirmed that their continued interest in Arlington Park has not changed." The unpopular truth is that we don't know what will happen next. I feel comfortable saying that because I have seen enough stadium deals fall through or change entirely over the years. And sometimes it's just best to wait for more answers. Chicago Bears president and CEO Kevin Warren dealt with a similar situation when he was with the Minnesota Vikings. In 2011, the Vikings had a deal to build their new stadium in Arden Hills, a suburb just outside of Minneapolis. That deal fell through, though, and the Vikings shifted their focus to downtown Minneapolis, building a billion-dollar stadium with about half the money coming from taxpayers. I tell you this because maybe it offers some indication of what the Bears might do in the future, with Warren previously ditching a suburban project in favor of a downtown project. However, the most important thing is to remember that sports ownership has changed a lot over the last several years. The most valuable teams now operate like real estate companies, owning their venues and building mixed-use developments nearby. The Atlanta Braves are probably the best example. In 2017, they left Atlanta for a new stadium in Cobb County called Truist Park. It was only 12 miles up the road, but it allowed them to build The Battery, a 75-acre mixed-use development surrounding Truist Park that includes restaurants, shops, hotels, offices, apartments, and more. This wasn't a vanity project either. The Battery is now the Braves' third largest revenue category, generating $59 million in additional revenue last year, and growing faster than any of the team's baseball-specific categories, including television rights, ticket sales, merchandise, and licensing deals. Many other teams across the United States have copied this model since, and it provides the perfect example of how a big-market franchise like the Chicago Bears could maximize value by owning their own real estate. That's it for today, though, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and I hope everyone has a great weekend. Please do me a favor and just make sure to share this podcast with a friend. Tweet it out, text it to them, whatever you prefer. Help me help you by making this the best podcast, bigger and better than ever before. Thanks, and have a great weekend.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.